This podcast on Sports360AZ.com is brought to you by your Valley Hyundai dealers. We appreciate the Valley Hyundai dealers and their support.
Now, the Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network studios.
It is Wild Card Day. No matter what happens tonight, we'll be leading with the Diamondbacks tomorrow. On the sports scene. Guarantee it. If they lose tonight, there'll be outrage over one game. How could Major League Baseball do this? What sort of thing are they thinking? It's like today in Minnesota where the Twins fans are upset even though the Yankees stomped all over their heads. If the Diamondbacks win, it'll be beat LA, beat LA, beat LA. And all of a sudden, a team that had been asleep at the switch for the last 5 years, the whole city is going to be turned upside down because it is the Dodgers, the team that peed in the pool. But you got to get past tonight. And tonight is a hot ticket. This is not like asleep at the switch. The Cardinals and Arizona State have done nothing this year in terms of getting the fan base excited. Really, they've not done much. A Larry Fitzgerald catch on Sunday in overtime against a bad 49er team is not going to turn the tide. Arizona State getting absolutely destroyed by Stanford. This has become a day where everybody's weighing in, even those that have not followed the Diamondbacks. And they get all, not the Diamondbacks, fans get all worked up. Oh, these fans haven't been around, bandwagon this, man. Doesn't matter. This is Phoenix. Deal with it. When a team wins, we care. When they don't, we don't. Call me guilty. Don't like it. Move. Really not that hard. There's all sorts of interesting stories going on today. Sean Miller was devastated. I got to get into that. The NBA All-Star format is changing. Everybody's crushing LaVar Ball for pulling his kid out of high school when these people that are crushing him obviously haven't been paying attention because this sort of nonsense has been going on forever. We'll have Seth Joyner with us, the great Seth Joyner. He is in Philadelphia. The Cardinals play the Eagles on Sunday. We'll have Seth Joyner on board. Looking forward to having Ron Darling with us today. Ron, of course, with TBS. And doing all the baseball analysis around the Diamondbacks with Ernie Johnson. He will be with us coming up at 10:50. Get into the game, the matchup tonight with the Rockies and the Diamondbacks. And there's a few other things I want to get to on today's show. But to start out with, Jordan Hamm has been living down at the ballpark with Haley Stasiak. If you've not been over to the site today, sports360az.com, in the last 24 hours, it's just been loaded with feature after feature after feature. Really good content. And the two of them are going to be there tonight. Jordan joins us for a couple of minutes. Do we know yet about what they are doing in terms of final position? Are they going to go with an extra pitcher? Are they going to go with a position player? I guess the question is, have they turned the roster in yet? Do you know yet?
As of right now, haven't really heard anything. Based on what I've heard from Torey Lovello in the coming days, he got advice from Bruce Bochy and Ned Yost, the two teams that they've played recently. He was able to sit down with them, get their strategy because they've both played in this game. And they were both leaning, having an extra position player with this one game playoff. He felt with a pitcher like Zach Greinke, he could potentially go pretty deep in the game. So having that extra position player, whether it be a pinch hitter, pinch runner, defensive replacement, he felt like that could have some value there. So my guess is it would be the extra position player over the pitcher right now.
Yeah, the tough part there, Jordan, is, yeah, Greinke, you expect him to go deep into a game, but you have one game here. And if you're sitting there right in the 15th inning and the 16th inning and you run out of pitchers, for whatever reason, you run out of pitchers, you're always going to second guess yourself. But I agree with the strategy. You would think with Greinke that it would be a low-scoring game tonight. I think we'd both be surprised if this was a 6-5 game tonight, right? I mean, this has got to feel like 3-1. This is not American League Baseball.
Yeah, I mean, I could see it going either way. Both of these lineups put up pretty crooked numbers, especially lately. The middle of the lineups for both of these teams are two of the best in baseball. And when you look at this Rockies lineup, you know, really starting off with Charlie Blackmon, he could get a big charge into this, Rockies fan base and that sort of thing with what he's been able to do early in ball games. So, I'm I'm cautious to say that it will be a low-scoring game.
Go on a limb, for crying out loud. Go on a limb, geez.
If I'm going to go out on a limb, I'd say probably the opposite, honestly. We've seen John Gray be dominant against the Diamondbacks. We've seen him get beat up. Same thing with Zach Greinke against the Rockies. These are two very good pitchers, but like what we saw last night with the Yankees and Twins, Severino had a very good year. Irvin Santana had a very good year, and they were both out by the second inning. So this could be a game that's just kind of two heavyweights with their lineups going head-to-head.
Okay, so while you're talking, I just got the update from the Diamondbacks just now, and they're going with 10 pitchers. So let me just make sure of this. So it's Bradley, Chafin, Corbin, De La Rosa, there's four, Godley's five, Greinke's six, Hernandez is seven, Ray is eight, Rodney is nine, and Scherfey is 10. So, yeah, so 10 pitchers. He's going to go with the extra arm tonight, and that just came down as we're sitting here talking. So interesting that they decided to go that way and having that extra arm in place, even with Greinke pitching. You spoke yesterday with J.D. Martinez and Paul Goldschmidt. So let's get into Goldschmidt for a second. I'll cut you loose because I know you have a big day in front of you. He's not been good here in the last week or so. People will point out to his whole September he wasn't very good. I think that's a little harsh, but when you go 0-17, that's not getting it done. What did he have to say about that, and do you think pressing could be something for Paul Goldschmidt tonight?
I don't really think so. When you ask him about his accolades, when you ask him about his struggles, you kind of get the same answer with it being a little bit harsh, but he kind of just like, I don't care. I'm not going to change. I'm going to always make tweaks to my approach as we go throughout, but he's had a very similar approach over the years, and that's made him one of the best players in baseball. So he's one of the few guys that has been in the playoffs before. Granted, it was his rookie year to kind of start his career. Mm-hmm. But he said he's taken the same approach, and that, slumps will come and, hot streaks will come, and he kind of said, the guy to my left right now with J.D. Martinez sitting there, he's at the peak right now and absolutely killing it. So I don't think he's pressing too much. I think having this week off, you never really know how players are going to react to that and how teams are going to be able to recover for that, in the sense of Paul Goldschmidt, who is continuing to push and try to, have the best, the best at bats that he can. I think it was good for him to have, a couple days off, kind of just reset, wipe the slate clean, and get going. So I wouldn't be too concerned with, how Goldie has struggled in the past week, especially after they did clinch that wild card spot and home field advantage.
All right, good stuff. You're going to be, you and Haley are going to be at the park all day today. Archie Bradley is talking.
Yep.
I guess Archie told people to put their phones down and to watch the game, which I thought was pretty good. But good luck today. Have fun with it, and we'll talk on tomorrow's show. Thanks.
All right. Thanks, Brad.
It's Jordan Hamm there. So Jordy's going to be at the ballpark tonight, along with Haley Stasiak. And again, if you're just joining us, there's plenty of content up on the website. 10 pitchers the Diamondbacks are going to go with today for their game against Colorado this afternoon at 5 o'clock. If they win, they move on and play the Dodgers. If they lose, it's over. Just like that. Poof. We've got Seth Joyner coming up here in a few minutes. We have Talk to the Lopes today at 11 o'clock. Nicole Powell is going to be with us, a new women's basketball coach over at GCU. And then we have Friday Night 360 AZ that comes up at 11:15. I'll sit in today for both Jordan and Haley. Our high school football show, I'll sit in for them today as they're down at the ballpark getting the job done down there. We're going to have Adam Turner with us, the NFF National Football Foundation president, chapter of Arizona, and what's the NFF all about, and a few other guests as well. But Seth Joyner is next. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. We turn our attention to Cardinals at Philly on the other side. Every day we are on AZCentral.com as well as Sports360AZ.com. Appreciate the partnership with them. Our television show on Fox Sports Arizona, 16 airings per week. We appreciate the partnership with FSAZ. The next voice you hear is part of the 2020 Club Interceptions and Sacks in NFL History. I always like to introduce Seth Joyner with that, and also the original analyst at the NFL Network. He's so good, though, that FS1 has been looking at him. Are you still doing stuff with them, by the way? You going to show up there from time to time? A little bit, maybe?
I am all over the place.
I know you are.
I'm still doing stuff with them. I got the month of October off because I got a lot going on in Philadelphia the month of October with some speaking engagements and appearances and stuff like that. But the end of the month, I'll be back on. So I'm doing that. And, you know, Comcast just changed his name to NBC Sports Philly. Doing the Fanatic Radio here in Philly. And just did a reading this morning for a voiceover for a story that CBS Sports Network is doing.
Really? So, listen to you.
A lot going on.
Wow. Just rolling in the checks.
Really, really blessed right now, man. A lot of good stuff going on.
Well, that's good. It's good to hear your voice. I appreciate you being on with us for a few minutes. I know your schedule is busy. All right. 3-1 Eagles. Pretenders, contenders. What do you make out of them so far?
I think the jury's still out. I like the direction that they're headed. I think the biggest concerns are, you know, will Doug Peterson get to a point, you know, where he will implement the same game plan that he did the last 2 weeks, a run heavy, you know, and not try to make the quarterback the star of the game. You know, you use your running game. You got three able running backs. Use your running game and bring play action alive. That's the first concern. The second concern, you know, is defensively. We traded for a cornerback out of Buffalo named Ronald Darby.
He's been hurt.
Really good player. He gets hurt, you know, so you got a bunch of young cornerbacks playing on the back end. And Fitz has just been, you know, Eagles killer his entire career. Every single time he plays against them, he just goes off. So, you know, those are the major concerns as far as, you know, the Eagles are concerned. You know, the good thing is they've had three road games out of the first four games and won them all. And now they've got four of the next five at home. So we'll see where it trends. I mean, they were 3-1 last year and went in the tank after that. So, you know, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me.
Well, and you're 2-0. The Eagles are 2-0 in the division too, which I think is important. Doesn't matter how bad the competition is. You're 2-0 in the division. You got to,
right?
You know, 4 weeks in, you have to feel pretty good about that. LeGarrette Blount, what have you seen out of him? You know, everybody that I've talked to that's related to an Eagle fan or is an Eagle fan was just devastated, upset, pissed off, for lack of a better term, with the Shady McCoy trade. But LeGarrette Blount, how's he fit in?
Well, listen, everybody's going to be, you know, pretty ticked off about the LeSean McCoy. I mean, they basically, you know, traded him for a linebacker that was coming off knee surgery.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're talking about one of the premier running backs in the game, in my opinion, still. And Chip made that trade, and a lot of people were really, really upset about it. You know, LeGarrette, you know, everyone at the beginning of the year was a little ticked off because, you know, he got minimal use the first 2 weeks. And, you know, the runs that he did get, you know, he looked like he was kind of running in quicksand. So, the talk was, oh, you know, he's lost it. You know, Belichick doesn't let good guys go, so on and so forth. And I think what wound up happening was, you know, I had said all along, he's just not getting enough carries. So lo and behold, week three, he gets 12 carries for about, I want to say, right around 65, 70 yards.
Pretty good.
And then last week he got 16 carries, you know, for a breakout, 126, 136 yards. So my contention all along was the fact that, you know, he just wasn't getting enough touches. In the last 2 weeks, we've been pretty run heavy. The Eagles have been run heavy. You know, 38 runs in week three and 42 runs in week four. So I think if they stick to that formula, mm-hmm. You know, not only is he going to be okay, but you present a better scenario for this young quarterback to develop. So we'll see.
Are you sold on Carson Wentz?
Oh, I think he's going to be a superstar, you know.
Okay, so when you say superstar, take me above Andrew Luck, Aaron Rodgers. I mean, when you say superstar, Seth, that doesn't come from you very often. You're not one to just throw that around willy-nilly.
Well, I look at his abilities. You know, he's kind of, to me, you know, he's got great arm strength. You know, he has the ability to use his legs like Aaron Rodgers, and he's smart enough to know when to run and when to scramble to buy time. He's hard to tackle. He's kind of a cross between, a potential cross, I would say, between Ben Roethlisberger and Aaron Rodgers. So the potential is great. You know, a lot of it just depends upon, you know, his development. And from a developmental standpoint for me, you know, early on when you're a quarterback in this league, it takes 3 years for you to see everything and for everything to slow down and for your eyes not to be fooled by, you know, blitzes, sugar blitzes, disguises and coverages and things like that, and get fooled by it. So I don't ever think it's a good idea, no matter how high you draft a quarterback, to be a pass-heavy team, because, you know, play-action pass is his best friend. If you can run the ball, or you commit to running the ball, and you let him develop. And then once he gets to a point where he can close his eyes and on every single play that's called, he can tell you exactly where every guy is, down to the last yard. And when he can look at protections and not have to rely on his center to make the protection calls, and when he can look at a defense and realize that, you know, this play over here will work better against this and make the correct check. Now, once he gets to that point, well, now you can hand him the keys to the car and let him go do his thing. But, you know, he's just second. You know, the kid has only played 20 games. You know, so he's not that far advanced, but he's advanced because he has the benefit of, you know, playing on a consistent basis. So he has the potential. He has all the tools. It will just, in my opinion, come down to Doug Peterson and how he handles them. I've always said I think that he has massive potential to be an extremely good quarterback, but his development, I liken it, you know, to the Matrix. I said, you know, he is Philadelphia's Neo. The question is whether Doug Peterson can be his Morpheus.
That's good. Seth Joyner is with us from Philadelphia. It's really good stuff. Of course, Valley resident as well. Cardinals at Philly on Sunday morning. One quick thought from you on the Cardinals. 69 sacks is the pace that Carson Palmer's on pace for. The number of hits is going to exceed three figures with the way he's being battered around. It's over 40 in the last two games. What do you make out of Arizona? Do you think Palmer makes it through the game upright?
Hey, listen, the worst thing that could ever happen to Carson Palmer is the loss of David Johnson. You know, it's one of those scenarios. It's like I get into debates with people all the time. Oh, you know, it's a passing league. It's a quarterback league. You know, it's a passing league, and it's a quarterback league for – Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady, Drew Brees, sometimes Phillip Rivers, okay? Those guys, it's a passing league. Those are the only four quarterbacks, as I look at the NFL, that you can say those guys can put it up 40 times to 50 times a game and still have some success. The rest of them, they need the running game. It's that simple. And when you don't give them a running game, you put them under tremendous pressure. You know, Carson isn't a quarterback, you know, who's very mobile, and he's not very adept at moving in the pocket when it's necessary either. So this lack of running game that they have has really put him, you know, in this offensive line, which is already much maligned, you know, in a position where there's so much pressure on him. You know, they kind of make themselves one-dimensional because they have no running game. Usually a defense is – objective is to make an offense one-dimensional by taking away the running game and making them pass the ball, or vice versa, you know. But they make themselves one-dimensional, which from a play-calling standpoint, you know, is a major plus for a defensive coordinator. Because if you can get them behind the sticks on second down, you can come after them and try to push them even further behind the sticks for third down. And if you get them behind the sticks on third down, now you got them guessing. You know, are they really trying to stick the dagger in, or are they going to be okay with us just gaining, you know, 10 yards and punting the ball? So, I mean, that's their deal. You know, if they can get back, if they can find a way to solidify the offensive line and get back to a rushing attack in some semblance, even if they commit to it, even if they don't have, you know, success, I mean, they don't have to have David Johnson-type numbers. What they need to have is about 85 to 90 yards and just enough commitment to the run to make defensive coordinators and defenses believe that they're going to consistently, you know, be balanced. But when they're so out of balance, you know, 45 passes to, you know, 15, 16 runs, you know, that's not a formula for success for most quarterbacks in the NFL.
Well, and I think you mentioned it earlier, you know, Fitz has killed the Eagles. So if Larry has, you know, like the other day, it was just a silent assassin. He had like three catches for negligible yards, and then he comes up with a game winner, and that's just what he does. And they're trying to Band-Aid it out here. And quite frankly, the offensive line is just such a mess, Seth. I don't see how Carson makes it through the next few weeks even, because he's just getting beat up so badly. Look, I appreciate the time and the insight as always. And you're back here in November?
I'm back, you know, periodically.
Yeah, yeah, all right.
I'm just here. I'm in Philadelphia, you know, for the next 2 weeks or so, because, you know, we've got the Sunday night game. I've got appearances next week, and then after the game next week, you know, they got the Thursday night game. So it really doesn't make sense for me to fly back, you know, for a couple of days and turn around and go back. So I'm kind of stuck here for this week, and you know, I'll be home, you know, for 4 or 5 days, you know, after the Thursday night game. So
I'll catch up with you. All right.
Good.
Stay well. Appreciate the time.
Man.
Later.
Anytime.
You got it. Seth Joyner. Always good to catch up with Seth. One of my favorite people. You know, when he was with the Cardinals, there were fans that just did not like him at all. And I hosted a show with him, Crunch Time with Seth. And the only reason why they didn't like him is because Buddy talked up about he and Clyde coming here and the team didn't win. That guy's got more going for him. It's good to hear him, and breaks it down very, very well. The NBA is doing something really strange to some people. To me, it's you got to fix what's not very good. And do we even need All-Star games? Everybody's ripping on LeVar Ball, and I don't get it. I'm going to get into that on the other side. And then we'll have Ron Darling with us from TBS that comes up in about 15 minutes. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. I'm Brad Sussmat. So we'll get back to the Diamondbacks in about 12 minutes with Ron Darling, TBS MLB analyst, on the call for tonight's Rockies D-backs NL wildcard matchup from Chase Field. He and Ernie Johnson will be on the call for Nats Cubs NLDS starting on Friday. So he's going to be a busy, busy dude. But he'll be on the broadcast tonight when you watch the Diamondbacks and their game against the Rockies. I want to get over to some other things today. And I actually like Sean Miller. I think Sean Miller as a recruiter and Sean Miller as a coach and Sean Miller doing what he should be doing on the collegiate level, he's done a very good job in my opinion. He's decided to stay in Tucson for all these years where he's tried to galvanize a program off of its past history. And I think people like Steve Kerr have stepped into the mix to help out, and other Luke Walton, any great name that involves U of A basketball has stepped in to try to get through the bridge of the downtime when Lute left and all the coaches that came through. And then Sean has come in and he stabilized it. Sean Miller yesterday finally, but he didn't speak. He was a written statement. There's a big difference. When you have somebody that speaks, they're actually into a microphone. When you see a press release that is sent out, that is typically almost 99.9% not written by the coach. It's not like the coach walks in and says, hey, so this is how I'm feeling. Please write this out. No, that's not how it works in this day and age. You have PR weasels. You have, and there's some good PR people, but most part they're weasels. You have legalese. You have the legal side. There's a lot of damage control being done. Let's make sure that we don't use words like I was shocked. That means you didn't know that was what was going on. And so... The word devastated, just the word devastated versus shocked. When I saw that yesterday, that Miller was devastated by the FBI probe, when you're shocked, it means you have no idea, no, it just goes right through your bones. Devastation, if I were to open up the computer, Eric, am I going on the right path here? You know, if I were to open up a computer right now, look at the definition between the two. I'm not doing that. Just to me, devastation means beyond comprehension. Shocked means it's just that initial, whoa, my gosh. Devastation is just, oh. Eric, am I on the same path as you on that one? That shocked,
I agree with that.
Shocked devastation. So when you saw this story yesterday, when I saw it, it was, okay, he didn't speak. That's a different spin because Rick Pitino used shocked. We all know what happened to Rick. Whenever people use the word shocked, it usually doesn't end well for them. Devastation is different. Still, the damage that is being done down there, because he has yet to sit in front of a camera and answer questions, to me, it only continues to grow. This didn't do much yesterday.
Yeah, you know my stance on this. It's pretty easy for Sean Miller to not write a statement, which likely didn't happen. It wasn't Sean Miller that wrote that. It was someone, one of the higher-ups at Arizona most likely wrote that.
One or several.
And, you know, you and I talked, I think a couple days ago, just out in the bullpen here, about how if you want to put this thing to bed or at least kind of silence some of the noise, just have Sean Miller sit down, call a press conference, and say, we're not going to be answering any questions, but he is going to speak. That way he has to – he can't hide behind something that is written. He has to sit down there in front of the cameras and the bright lights and make this statement. And that, to me, would have a greater impact than what he and the university released yesterday, 7 days after this event happened. And I know it's sensitive, and I know they have to be careful because of the legality issue.
Right.
But it just wasn't – it's just not a good look.
It's the optic. It's the optic.
It's just not a good public image look for U of A.
Okay, and maybe Sean Miller wants to do this. I'll give you an example. Steve Ballas was sitting in here 4 months ago, okay?
Yep.
It's – I'm not going to compare hazing of high school kids, but I'm going to compare the situation of somebody who's in the midst of something that is going on and they want to get their view of what happened out there. Okay. Sean Miller may be wanting to speak and he may be having everybody sit on him and say, there's no way in hell you're going to speak at this point. What I thought was really interesting about yesterday was, you know, the statement. When he's talking about culture of compliance, that's a legalese term. I don't think Sean Miller walks around to people and say, you know, we have a culture of compliance.
No way.
Here.
No way.
I mean, that's why a lot of times when this stuff happens, you just look at it and you roll your eyes and you're just like, okay, this is just a piece of paper. I'm not paying attention to it. We published it yesterday because it is part of the cycle of this story. We didn't put any thought in terms of what our belief is. It's just, here's the statement from Sean Miller, 7 days later, here's a statement from the president. So the president, his quote was, based on the fact, part of his quote, and you can go see it on the site, based on the facts that we know at this time, based on the facts that we know at this time, what does that mean? Here's what we know today. Based on the facts that we know at this time, we support Coach Miller and intend. Doesn't mean we are. Having an intention is much different than we are. We intend to provide him with all the tools necessary to meet our goals and expectations. Okay, so based on the facts we know at this time, there better not be another shoe that drops, because if there is a shoe that drops that's attached to Sean in any way, shape, or form, the way that this reads to me, The words of based and intend tell me that, okay, as long as this is it, we're okay. If there's anything more than this, we're not going to be okay. So, you know, for Sean to say he's devastated, what else is he going to say? Now, next week is Pac-12 Basketball Media Day in the Bay Area. Is Sean Miller going to be allowed to speak? Is all it going to be, Sean can't say anything about it. There'll be some guys wearing red shirts with U of A logos on them. Sean's only going to answer questions about basketball. That's not how it works. You may try to make it how it works. That's not how it works. So there's that side of it. LeVar Ball. So LeVar Ball pulls this kid out of high school. Guys, I was at a club basketball event this weekend, and we were supposed to play. We did play games. And in between one game, we had a parent that came up. Yeah, my kid's not playing on this team anymore. He's going to jump over to this club. That's like commonplace. And there's kids that have been on 5, 6, 7 club teams, and they're in 5th grade, 6th grade, 7th grade. You know, crazy dads or dads that are really smart. There are people that believe that LeVar Ball is just flat brilliant on all of this, or that he's ahead of the curve, or he's groundbreaking, or he's this, or he's that. I don't know. Maybe it's because I've had four kids and I've seen the club basketball scene for 25 years. There's really nothing groundbreaking with LeVar Ball. He's just in a day and age of social media where, and he's in a day and age of clicks and views, and there's a curiosity factor. So whenever he does something, unfortunately, in our 24-hour news cycle business, there are shows that will do nothing but, is this a bad parent or is this a good parent, when it's been going on forever. And it's not just basketball related. You know, there's kids I know that have been in motocross that don't go to school. They get pulled out of school because they want to go race professionally worldwide. You can go into the whole thing about prep schools, academies. You can go into all that stuff. So bang away on them all you want. And it's not that big of a deal. It's another way for him to use his megaphone to go sell shoes and make it about his kids. And unfortunately, in our business, people lead their shows or do whole half hours on this stuff. It's just my 2.5 minutes. This isn't anything to lose sleep over, or especially to line up and get an autograph from him. I mean, come on. You hearing yourselves? Time now for Talk to the Lopes. Every Wednesday, we talk Grand Canyon University Athletics. Brad Sussmat with you, sports360az.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. Our television show on Fox Sports Arizona airs 16 times per week. Check it out there. Our next guest, this is one of those interviews that you do when you say to yourself, man, you're old, because I would see Nicole Powell. Actually, I would hear about Nicole Powell when she was in high school. This is when I was at Channel 3. And then I would go out and see her and like, oh my gosh, she's going to kill it. And she left and went to Stanford and she did well there. Then I'd see her at the WNBA, and now full circle, she is now the head basketball coach on the ladies' side at GCU. We had Dan Marley on last week. On the men's side, ladies' side, it's a hometown kid making good coming home, Nicole Powell, with us for a few minutes. How are you, coach?
I'm doing great. Yeah. Good to be here.
It's good to have you here, Nicole. So let's just go through the journey of, and I don't want to.
You feel old.
Yeah.
I feel old.
Listen to you. You shouldn't feel old. It's like, I'm talking old man Sussmat here. The thing is, your journey, I want to take it from the end of the WNBA and where you started feeling as though you were going to be a coach on the next step. And maybe it is going back to Mountain Point or Stanford. The question is, when did you first think, hey, coaching could be something for me?
You know, when I really thought about it seriously was actually the end of my WNBA career. And I knew it was coming to an end at some point. And, you know, is you got to start planning and thinking ahead. And I had done, some different internships throughout my career. But, you know, it was funny as I became the veteran on the team, which happened so quickly. You know, it's like before you know it, you used to be the youngest, you used to be a rookie, and then here you are, the oldest person on the team. And, you know, I really enjoyed working with our younger players. You know, it just kind of happened naturally, mm-hmm. Just doing extra shooting, extra conditioning, you know, talking the game before and after games, during practice, and trying to – you know, it didn't happen on purpose, but naturally just you want to share advice. You want to share your wisdom. You want your team to be successful. So anything you can give, you try to do. And so as that kind of started to happen, I thought, man, maybe I should be a coach. And that's when I had, thorough discussions with a couple of my mentors and my family. And, you know, they all really believe was a great vision for me. And there was just a lot of people, who thought, yeah, that sounds right. I think you should explore that option. So that gave me confidence to go ahead and pursue that. And here I am. I had no idea this would come of it so quickly. But, you know, I thought, let me go for it. Had my first experience at Gonzaga,
right,
as an assistant coach under Kelly Graves. And that really sealed the deal for me. You know, after that season, it was one of the best years of my life. And it just gave me a new kind of energy, you know, and just a new kind of focus that I really enjoyed, you know. And, you know, when you enjoy doing something, I think they call that passion. I think you should pay attention to it.
Yeah, where it's not work, right? So I'm curious on the – so WNBA, you also had some time at the University of Oregon, right? You helped out there?
Yes.
Yeah, so
yes.
So what is it that you had to learn? Because, look, if I'm talking to Nicole Powell on shooting form, X and O, boxing out, you know, pick and roll, I got it. But what is it that you had to learn? Because typically what I've found, Nicole, is when a coach makes the transition from player to coach, they don't know what they can and can't do in recruiting. They don't know what they don't know in terms of media and dealing with media, dealing with families, all that stuff, okay? Mm-hmm. What is it you had to learn in order to say, okay, now I can really do this?
I think it was twofold. You know, what you just mentioned, the recruiting side of things is a whole different beast. And just really kind of learning the business of college athletics, you know, how to run, how departments run, how a team runs, managing people, all the people involved in making your team be successful, right? From, of course, your assistant coaches and the trainer, all the way to your marketing people and all the people who are, you know, pushing for you to be successful as a program. There's so many people who have a hand in that, and really understanding that. I think as a coach, you know, I kind of took for granted some of the things I knew. And when you go back to the college level, I've been a pro for so long and playing at such a high level. When you go back to this age group, and it really, I had to get back into their shoes. What are they going through? What do they need to learn? And how do I communicate those things? And so that was a real eye-opener for me. And I think that's also when I realized I had a lot of knowledge to share at this level. And so just getting out there every single day, you know, being their coach, and then also understanding what they're going to do on a daily basis as a student athlete. You know, that we ask so much of these young women and men, from community service, handling their studies, just navigating college life at that age, and trying to be a positive mentor in that way.
Talk with Nicole Powell, talk to the Lopes. Every week we talk Grand Canyon University. Appreciate the partnership with them. Nicole Powell, women's basketball coach at GCU. This may be a lot of behind the curtain stuff, but on a business end of things, who made the contact to get you to GCU? How did it all happen for you to get to GCU?
Gosh, I think I got to give credit to Mike Vaught, our athletic director, and Jamie Boggs, our associate AD. I don't know. I mean, he's obviously joined in this incredible vision that our president has spurred, and just the whole growth of the university. And it's just been unbelievable impact that we're making here in the Valley. And then from the athletic standpoint, you know, Mike has just come in and brought in really great coaches from around the country and all the different sports. I'm not sure how he got on his radar, you know, to be honest. You know, I don't know who called on my behalf. I just know I got a call one day, and Kelly, my head coach at University of Oregon, said, "Hey, what do you think about this opportunity?" And I, you know, honestly didn't know all of the incredible growth and things that were happening at GCU since I had been away. And so when I met him at the Final Four, I mean, our talk, I think we had planned 30 minutes to chat and get to know one another, and I think it went over 2 hours.
Wow.
And, you know, I think it speaks, number one, to who Mike Vaught is, but also who the university is, because he was a representative of that. He asked about me. He asked about my journey. He asked about my family. He wanted to get to know who I was beyond just being a coach and what I could do for the program. And it stuck with me. And I just thought that was incredible. And I was hooked. And then I got to come and meet everybody else after that.
So at the Final Four, you're sitting with Mike Vaught. A half-hour meeting turns into 2 hours. Had you ever been on campus before? And did he get you to campus while you were in town for the Final Four? Take me through that.
Yeah, it was actually at the Women's Final Four, which was in Dallas, and I had not been on campus. I might have come over as a youth for some kind of, I don't know, BCI tournament.
Sure,
myself here. Who knows what that is anymore? but I hadn't been on campus since, And, you know, funny enough, I had actually read a couple of articles, I think, about Dan, the men's team, you know, what was going on while I was at Oregon throughout the year, and just kind of the school spirit there. And I thought, that's really cool. But, you know, I just, you know, didn't have any meaningful impact on me.
Right.
And so then after the Final Four, you know, they flew me out for a visit, and I was blown away.
Yeah.
Really, really blown away.
So by that time, are you, please make me an offer, or yeah, or yes, I'm going to do, you know, how did that process work? Do you remember where you were when you were offered the job?
I do. So after my visit, and I'm flying back to Oregon, that's when I really wanted the job. You know, when I really understood the big picture of the athletic program, mm-hmm. of the university, and all the people involved, you know, meeting, you know, Jamie, spending more time with Mike, you know, meeting President Mueller, and just, I wanted to be a part of what they were doing. I think it's a huge mission in college sports of how we're doing things. And I just love what they're doing here in the Valley. So it really hit me on so many levels, you know, and obviously as a coach, wanting to be a part of this, feeling like we're getting the things that would help build a successful program as far as our budget, as far as our facilities, and just the support that the university was giving us. But then to see what the impact GCU is making here in the Valley, my hometown, it's bigger than sports, you know, even really bigger than academics, which sounds a little crazy, but, you know, really having a student body that is so intentional and purposeful about wanting to make a difference. Mm-hmm. And I think that the university is doing that. And so for me, it just was a, you know, so many things that just said, this is a really special place. And I want to join this GCU family. So a few days later, you know, I'm thinking, I don't know how it went. I don't know what they think about me. I don't remember what I said in the interview. I was driving on the highway from Eugene to Portland for an event. And I got the call from Mike. And he said, how would you like to be the next head coach at Grand Canyon University?
Wow.
It was, no hesitation. I think I had tears in my eyes. And I said, absolutely, be an honor. And that was that. And things moved very quickly.
That's awesome. Now, I've had a daughter who went to GCU and graduated. And she's going back there for her master's. And I've seen the program through the years. So I get what you're talking about. The vibe on campus. Nicole Powell is with us.
Yeah.
She is the women's head basketball coach at Grand Canyon University, coming into her first season. Okay, so you accept the job. You come here. You've got to hire staff. You're coming into your first year. You got to look at scheduling. You got to look at recruiting. You've got to look at the players. This is kind of a dicey subject, I would think, but the players that were here under the previous regime, and letting them know mm-hmm. that you're the new face and the new voice and the buy-in factor, how is that going as you're coming into your first season? I would imagine it's not a problem. Maybe it is, maybe it's not.
You know, to be honest, I wasn't sure,
yeah.
you know, how they were going to react, you know, what their experience had been. I think it's always a tough thing to have a coaching change, and especially at this age group. You know, I didn't recruit these kids. You know, I didn't know their families. And so I think there's a little bit of a fear factor, you know, from their standpoint, you know, is she going to be on my side? Is she looking for the next recruit, you know?
Yeah.
But I was really pleasantly surprised. They are all incredible young women. They were excited to have me there. They welcomed me with open arms. I really, truly felt that within their attitude. And, you know, with the start of practice, we've been 2 days in, and even from the summer, they've been given everything they have. And as a coach, you know, that's what you want. You can't ask for anything more than the buy-in and just giving your very best effort on a daily basis. You know, question, we have a lot of work to do. We're nowhere near where we need to be, but I think it's been a really good start. And, you know, I also know what it means to not sleep. It's 18 inches over.
Yeah, yeah.
When, like you said, I had to hire a staff, had to figure out scheduling, had to
sure.
bring in basically a whole half of a new team. I didn't sleep for quite a while. I'm getting back into getting at least 7 hours, which is really nice. But I love our kids. I love our young women. Love our staff. And I think they feel like this is a new beginning. and a new era for the program, and they're excited to be a part of that.
And with the eligibility of being in March Madness this year, if you're fortunate to make it, I mean, you're coming in at the time. I mean, you're really coming in at a great time, and I look forward to visiting with you during the season. We'll talk further about X's and O's and the players in particular, but thanks for coming on this week.
It was a pleasure.
There's Nicole Powell with us. Nicole Powell, the women's basketball coach at Grand Canyon University. And that is Talk to the Lopes for this week. Thanks for checking out this podcast on Sports360AZ.com, brought to you by your Valley Hyundai dealers.